was sent that we won't be meeting here again next Sunday. But I had stated previously that we would have our Bible question and answer on the fifth Sunday, and the last Sunday to have questions put in is next Sunday night. If we're not here, that presents a little bit of issue. So if you have a Bible question that you want me to deal with, feel free to email me your question. And my email address you can use is preach.t.walker@gmail.com. Feel free to go ahead and do that. Or if you want to swing by the building this week and drop it off in the little box in the back, you can do that. Also, let's be mindful that our morning class that we typically would have in the morning on Sunday will be tonight at 5 o'clock, and that will be Zoom. And if I remember right, not from down at the building, so everyone will be at home, and we had done that previously. And so tonight at 5 o'clock on Zoom, and the link for tonight's class is on there. And then also on Wednesday night, the link for the adult class and the women's class was sent out yesterday, so we won't be meeting here on Wednesday night as well. Okay, so with all that behind us, I just had to take advantage of this situation and talk about what I wanted to talk about, something I thought was important. Where we're at, I hear people say it on the news and things like that. We're starting year three of COVID. You realize that year three, where are the past 2 years gone? I know there's in some historical circumstances, there's been things called like the lost decade or the lost year. I feel like we've had the lost 2 years in a lot of way. And it's tiring for me. I know like when I go to a restaurant, they'll have a sign. It has that picture that we're all so familiar with of an individual silhouette with a mask on. It's like, okay, do I wear a mask? Do I not wear a mask? And even though it's not required, it is something that is encouraged. And so, you know, what do you do in those kinds of circumstances? I was frustrated yesterday as I went to Starbucks to go get coffee, and I noticed that there's like a dozen cars in line for the drive-thru at the slowest Starbucks I've ever been to. And I'm like, why am I going to bother with the line? Let me just go into the lobby. And the doors are locked. I said, sorry, cafe's closed. Why? Staffing issues because of COVID and COVID issues. I mean, it's such a major component of our life. And then you hear who is getting COVID at this time. And we hear several of our friends back home, back in California, young people as well as old people, and it's just like nonstop. So-and-so has COVID, so-and-so has COVID. Here are some that are in the hospital. You know, we have Vicky who's in the hospital. There's a young man out in California who has been in ICU with COVID, and he's, I want to say Josh is in his mid to late 20s. It's just out there. And so what do we do? You know, when they say everyone is going to get this strain, everyone's going to get it, what do we do? Due to COVID, here we are. And we're back home again. We're isolated again to some extent, separated again. And yeah, I don't know if I'm the only one. I'm a little bit frustrated by it. Not to go too far down a negative road, I think we need to stop and talk about some positive things, and that is, you know, number one, as the congregation here on Billy Hex Row, I think we need to be very appreciative of John and Larry and their humility, their passion for God, their compassion for God's people, and their wisdom that they've been using. I know that what we're doing today and what we did last Sunday night and what we'll do next week is not easy on them. I've talked with John. John and I have talked, and there's been texts that have gone back and forth. It's not an easy decision. And so we need to be appreciative of them, and also we need to continue to pray for them. I think we need to be aware of our church family that's dealing with illnesses. And it might not just be COVID, but it might be something else, but because of a lack of testing or ability to test and things like that, it's better to be safe. Families are quarantining when one individual has it. And so we need to remember them, pray for them, appeal to God for healing. But I want to take this situation today and talk about something that I think is important. Because what we're faced with, in a lot of ways, is a little bit of a setback, isn't it? You know, we figure, okay, we're doing so much better, and then this is the winter of darkness and despair, and all of a sudden everyone's getting something. We're back to isolated for 2 weeks, and we're thankful at this point that it's 2 weeks, and pray that it's not more than that. But it's a setback. What is a setback? Setbacks are checks to progress. It's a reversal. It is a disappointment. It's a delay. It's a difficulty. It's an obstacle. It's an impediment. It's a slowdown. And we understand in life that there are setbacks. That while life is beautiful and we have so many great experiences in life, wouldn't you agree with me that there's times where we don't necessarily experience those things, where the events that we face are hard, where they're complicated, where they're challenging, and sometimes they're just flat out tragic. And we hit those speed bumps, the speed bumps that slow you down. But sometimes they just don't slow us down. Sometimes it's like hitting a wall, and they stop us dead in our tracks. I think the spiritual life is very similar to that. The life that we have in Christ, the life that we experience as children of God, is it not something that's amazing and it's beautiful and we have good times in that, but at the same time, aren't there times that are hard? Times that are challenging? Times that can be confusing, complicated, and even tragic. And they slow us down in our faith, and sometimes they can cause us to come to a complete halt in our faith. We think that we're doing well and we're making progress, but that progress gives way to retrogress, and we go the other direction. It's like the person who is working on some Christian character quality that they say, I really need to be better at that. And you make progress, you make progress. Maybe it's something like controlling anger or being more patient or being more loving or joyful in life. And that's the goal that we have. And then what do? As we progress down that road, sometimes we hit those speed bumps and we take a step backwards. Or maybe there's an issue in our life that needs to be dealt with. Maybe something that's sinful, something that's habitual. And we make progress on it only to find at some point we stop. And we hit a speed bump. How do we deal with that? How do we view it? Because how we view it often affects how we deal with it. Do we view setbacks as opportunities to drop out, to pull out, to pull back, to walk out, or to quit? Or do we view them as opportunities to pause, to reflect, maybe restart, to learn and grow closer to God? See, the setbacks that we face, whether in physical life experiences or even spiritually, they don't determine necessarily the direction of our life as much as they reveal the character of our life. In 1919, there was a gentleman who worked for the Kansas City Star newspaper. And he was fired by the editor because the editor said he lacked imagination and had no good ideas. This individual decided that he was going to buy a business. And this business Well, it wasn't long that he drove it into bankruptcy. So he and his brother decided to move from Missouri all the way out to California. Walt Disney in 1966, when he died, was worth about $150 million, $1.2 billion in our currency. No imagination, no creativity. That's what some people thought. They had no good ideas, and yet we know the story, don't we? Walt Disney created an empire of animation and entertainment that is second to none. When we look at the Bible, there's a man who struggled with setbacks. He dealt with challenges to his face, speed bumps, and yes, there's even a point where he hit a roadblock. And I want to talk about him this morning, just give several just quick points about him. I know we started a little bit late. I thought about, just for a split second, giving you that extra time, but we're not going to do that. In 1 Kings 19, we come across the man Elijah. And we know who Elijah is. Elijah is a fascinating individual because he is one of the great prophets that God sends. He's not like some of the other prophets that were prophets that wrote. Elijah, he only spoke. What we know about Elijah is the Messiah was to come, and he was going to come, and he was going to follow one like Elijah that would prepare the way. When people were thinking about who Jesus was, you know, Jesus asked that question to the apostles. They said, well, some say you're Elijah. When he's on the cross, he's calling out for Elijah. And yet you look at Elijah, and Elijah is just no background to his story. It's just, boom, he's on the scene. And he's this major prophet of God. In 1 Kings chapter 19, there's some circumstances that cripple Elijah. And yet what we need to know before we read that is that while there were things that crippled Elijah, there were a lot of events that preceded this that built his faith. You go back to chapter 17 and verse 1 through verse 7, and God brings a drought into the land. He experiences God's drought, and yet what God tells Elijah is, the ravens are going to give you food and you're going to have water from the brook. And Elijah is taken care of. But the brook, because of the drought, eventually goes dry, and so Elijah goes to stay with a widow. And this widow only has enough food for her and for her son. Yet you know the story, don't you? Where what Elijah says is, serve me, and if you serve me, then you will never go without. And she had flour and she had oil as much as she needed during that time. Again, he sees God's work. But you go on a little bit later in that, and what happens to the widow's son? He dies. And Elijah is there and he prays to God and he witnesses God's miraculous healing of this son. Which, by the way, you really don't see a lot of bringing people back to life from the dead before Elijah, or even after Elijah for that matter. Just a couple of instances. In chapter 18, he's told to go to Ahab. You have an interchange between him and a man by the name of Obadiah. But what I like in this circumstance is Elijah goes to Ahab, and look at chapter 18 and beginning at verse 17, Ahab sees Elijah, and Ahab says to him, is it you, you troubler of Israel? And Elijah doesn't shrink back in boldness of faith. He says, I have not troubled Israel, but you have and your father's house, because you have abandoned the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. He says, it's not me, Ahab. If you're going to point the finger at anyone, point the finger at yourself. This is you and your father. Where did he get that? Well, he got that confidence because of his experiences of faith and the Word of God prior to this. He calls Ahab to gather the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Asherah. And so in chapter 18 and verse 20 through verse 40, you have the contest on Mount Carmel. And I love how Elijah enters into that situation. In verse 21 of chapter 18, it says, Elijah came near to the people and said, "How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if it is Baal, then follow him." He's like, why do you keep bouncing back and forth between these two things? Choose one side or the other. And he says that to a number of people that were there. Go on in chapter 18. He witnesses the fact that Baal doesn't answer the prayers of his people, his prophets, but God answers with great fire and destroys the sacrifice, drinks up all the water that was poured over it. Elijah witnesses victory. And then at the end of chapter 18, Elijah witnesses that after 3.5 years, God sends rain. And he tells his servant to go out and to look. Servant comes back, says, "I don't see anything." He does that 7 times. On the 7th time, he sees, I see a cloud like the size of a man's hand rising out of the sea. And the very last verse, verse 46, says, "The hand of the Lord was on Elijah." All those things built his faith. And yet you come to chapter 19, and you have an event that shakes his faith. Chapter 19, and beginning at verse 1, this is what we read. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. And Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as one of them by this time tomorrow." And he was afraid, and he rose, he ran for his life, came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, came and sat down under a broom tree, and he asked that he might, what? Die. He says, "It's enough, O Lord, take away my life. I'm no better than my father's." What happened? Elijah, who had been listening to God, in this circumstance, he starts to listen to Jezebel. He listens to her threat of death, and it causes him to be discouraged, to fear. And then he listens to himself, and he takes that discouragement, that fear, and he quits, doesn't he? He quits on life. He says, "It's enough. I'm done. Lord, take away my life." But it wasn't just about his life. He was ready to quit on the work. What's he say? "I am no better than my fathers." Who he's talking about when he mentions the fathers, he's talking about the prophets that had come before. The ones that spoke God's message that Israel needed to turn from their wickedness and follow God. And yet Elijah continues to see this wickedness, and so he looks at what they did as failure, and he looks at what he's been doing as failure, and he says, "I'm no better. Just let me go. Let someone else come do the work. Maybe they'll have more success." And yet it's in this circumstance that we find God working. Because what God does, beginning in verse 5, is God comes to calm him. And he does this in a way that evidences how gentle God is. Look at verse 5 beginning. "And he lay down and slept under a broom tree, and behold, an angel touched him and said to him, 'Arise and eat.' And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and he drank and he lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you.' And he arose and ate and drank and wet in the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mountain of God. See the gentleness of God. Elijah knew better. And yet Elijah's faith is troubled. He's having a setback, if you would. But God doesn't come to him and rebukes him. God comes to him in the form of an angel. And the angel gently touches Elijah. Just that gentle touch. It's what we would do with our kids or spouse if the situation is fearful. It's just that gentle touch to say, don't worry, I'm right here. And that's what God's doing. He's telling Elijah, don't worry. I'm not far away. I'm right here. The psalmist in Psalm 145 and verse 18, the Lord is near to all who call on him, to all who call on him in truth. But not only do we see how gentle God can be with someone who's struggling, we also see how gracious. Because God allows Elijah to do something. In verse 4, God allowed Elijah to give voice to his frustration. To say, it's enough, I'm done, I'm no better. God allowed him to do that. But then God provided, notice in verse 6, food and rest for Elijah. He gives him food. He says, okay, here, excuse me, here's baked stones, here's a jar of water. And Elijah eats it and he lays down. And notice, God lets him lay down again and sleep and rest. And then a second time the angel touches him. And this time the angel doesn't say, okay, that's it, you're done, you've slept enough, time to go. No, he says, look, here's more. Eat, for the journey is long. God provides food, God provides rest, and then God is patient with Elijah. He realized that one rest wasn't enough for Elijah to recover to where he needed to be, and so he allowed him to rest again. And he says to eat a second time because you're going on a journey. You know how far that journey is from where Elijah is to Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai? It's about a 200-mile journey. And Elijah takes 40 days to get there. If you do the math, the journey should take about 20 days. But God allows him to take his time. Why? Because during this whole process, Elijah is recovering. God's allowing that. That's his patience. How does God show us grace in our setbacks? How does he show us gentleness? He allows us to voice our frustration, doesn't he? In Romans, the 7th chapter, verse 21 through 25, where the Apostle Paul, he says, you know, the things that I don't want to do, those are the things that I do, and the things that I do want to do are the things that I don't do. And Paul's response is, oh, wretched man that I am. Did God allow Paul to voice his frustration? Yeah, Paul said, look at me. I'm struggling. But then what we notice is not only that God allows us to have voice to our frustration, but he provides what we need. Whether we know we need it or not, God always provides what is good, what is for our benefit. James chapter 1, verse 17, every good and perfect gift comes down from above. But then God is also patient, isn't he? That when we seek a closer relationship with him, and sometimes we struggle, sometimes we stumble, sometimes we hit those setbacks, God is patient. Here's the thing with Elijah. At this point, you think Elijah gets it? God moves from compassion, sadly, to the next needed step, which was confrontation. If you look at verse 9, there he, Elijah, came to a cave and he lodged in. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Elijah's response is, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with swords. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Elijah is restating the feelings that he had before. Even though God has been patient with him, even though God has been gentle with him, even though God has calmed him, Elijah has not progressed. So what God does is he challenges Elijah's attitude. And he says to Elijah, what are you doing here? You stop and think about that. Doesn't God know why Elijah's there? It's kind of like in Genesis 3 and verse 9 when Adam and Eve had eaten the fruit and they hid themselves. God says, where are you? Didn't God know? Or in Genesis chapter 4 and verse 9 when Cain kills his brother Abel. And God goes to Cain and says, where's your brother? Doesn't God know what's happened? Absolutely. But there are some times in our lives where God asks us to stop and to think ourselves about where we're at. The circumstances, what's caused this, our reaction, our focus. God's asking Elijah, Elijah, stop and think about where you're at. And then in verse 11, we have this great situation where God tells Elijah, go and stand out on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind, and after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake, and after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire, and after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, went out, stood at the entrance of the cave, and behold, there came a voice to him and says, what are you doing here, Elijah? This is what I want us to see in this, is that sometimes God works in big ways. Sometimes God works in the metaphorical earthquake or the metaphorical wind or the metaphorical fire. We see that throughout Scripture. He comes down on Mount Sinai, he came out in a big way. The miracles of Jesus, big way. But sometimes God works in very small ways, doesn't he? And that's what's represented by that small voice. Some translations will say sound of a low whisper, literally a delicate whisper. God's not yelling to Elijah, he's saying, Elijah, what are you doing here? Why are you here? What's Elijah's problem? He didn't think he saw God working. I'm just like my fathers. Let me go. I'm done. I'm not accomplishing anything. See, no matter if we perceive it or not, God's always working. And we might hit that speed bump and stumble. We might hit that wall and say, it's just not worth it. But God's always working. I think that the things that we do, that we might stumble in, don't really matter. They do. You might think that your struggles, your speed bumps, your setbacks are too much. But God's still working, isn't he? So don't give up. God challenged not only Elijah's attitude, he challenged Elijah's assumptions. In verse 14, Elijah says, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, killed your prophets, the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek to take my life away. But what's God say? Verse 18, Elijah, there are 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. You're not alone. There's 7,000 of my people still living a pure life, want to serve me, follow me. You're not alone. Then Elijah also assumed his work was over. Let me die, Lord. And yet God, what's God tell him? Look at verse 15. It says, go, return your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholath, you shall anoint to be the prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha shall be put to death. Or Elisha shall put to death. We look at that, it's very easy to say, oh, those are just names. What's that mean? What's God saying? Hazael is the king of Syria. God's saying, you go and anoint him because I'm going to use him. And God would use him to punish and to correct some of the things that Ahab brought into the land. He says, you go and you anoint Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, to be king over Israel. Here's what's remarkable. God tells him to go do that while Ahab's still alive. He says, Jehu is going to be my man, who's going to right the wrongs of Ahab. And you anoint Elisha. You know who Elisha is? God tells Elijah he's going to be the prophet after you. You go and anoint him. And when you look at Scripture and the record, there's kind of this internship process that goes along where Elisha starts to follow Elijah and they form a close bond. What's God saying is, Elijah, you need to have someone with you to walk with you, a friend, a companion. But not only that, here's the thing. He says, you're going to die, Elijah, and Elisha is going to take the mantle. See, Elijah, you do your work for a period of time, and when your time's over, guess what? There'll be someone else. You don't need to give up. You need to keep going. I don't care what it is, whether we talk COVID and current circumstances. We talk about physical life and aspirations and goals that we might have that maybe we just don't realize at that point in time. Or we talk about spiritual things where I want to be spiritually, but I'm just not there yet. Maybe they're all setbacks in life. What do we do? Is it time to give in to despair? No, it's the time to look to God, isn't it? Look to Him for His gentleness and for His grace. Seek Him, seek His word, seek His work. Well, as we close this morning, we want to give an opportunity. Anyone that's here that needs to respond to an invitation in any way. But we also know that there's people at home that are watching. And maybe you are struggling with something. There's sin in your life, discouragement, and you need prayers. Let us know. Let John know, let Larry know, let myself know, let one of the deacons know. Get the word to us. And then also with that, so I wanted to say before is, while we're mindful of all the things that are going on right now and the illnesses we pray that we peek out real quick and this kind of goes away. Whatever it is, if there's something that you need, if you're part of the church family here and there's something that you need physically, let us know as well. And we'll do what we can to help out. But this is a time for us to not only grow closer together as a fellowship of God's children, but also to grow closer to Him. So if we can help you to do what you need to do, we encourage you to do that. We're going to stand and sing a song now.